I was asking delegates to please use a specific language. You know, please make sure you say lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex. Please make sure you use sexual orientation and gender identity specifically. Otherwise, we are gonna be overlooked again.
Making Rainbow Waves, a podcast by Ilga World. Welcome to Making Rainbow Waves, the podcast by Ilga World, where we tell the stories of LGBTI human rights defenders worldwide. My name is Daniele Paletta, and I'm here today with Enkma Engbold from LGBT Center Mongolia. Welcome, Enkma.
Hi, Daniele. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with asking you some questions. And I wanted to know more about your story as an activist. How did you start engaging with LGBTI activism in the first place?
So I used to live in the United States, particularly in the Bay Area, California. And I lived there for many years. And basically, I left Mongolia when I was 16. It was 2002. That's when I left the country. And in 2015, I outreached to National Violence Against Women in Mongolia. I wanted to do a volunteer for 3 months. So I was coming to Mongolia. So as a queer person, I wanted to know where Mongolian LGBTQI people were. So when the National Center Against Violence accepted me, I outreached to the LGBT Center of Mongolia. That's when I learned of the LGBT Center. And the LGBT Center told me to come over, you know, whenever you're in town. And so in summer of 2015, I came to the LGBT Center, met with the activists, and I was blown away. I was very impressed by how advanced the movement was, because when I was in the Bay Area, I actually had this very narrow mind of how things might be in Mongolia, and I was very wrong, and I was silently embarrassed. So I began to volunteer for LGBT Center during my time in Mongolia, and I navigated through LGBT, like queer spaces in Ulaanbaatar City. And then I've met more activists, more queer people, and then I fell in love with Mongolian LGBTQI movement and actors and all the activists in the community. And there and then, silently in my heart, I thought, I think this is my place. So I grew to, I volunteered from a distance. You know, I used to live in San Francisco. So I would volunteer for the center, doing some translation or like support the fundraising and things like that. And in 2017, the LGBT Center invited me on their board. And I was, of course, exhilarated. I was so happy to be part of this very amazing organization. So I did. And and then I learned more of the organization. And in the meantime, I was still living in San Francisco, you know. In 2019, there was an opening for the LGBT Center for a health program coordinator. So my background is women and gender studies. So it kind of aligns with the program, and I'm also an activist and human rights defender. So I applied, and they accepted me with open arms. And so in 2019, April, in 2 weeks, I packed my 17 years of life in San Francisco in a few boxes, and I moved to Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. And I've been here since. And in end of 2019, I was appointed as the executive director of the organization. And even though I was so scared, I accepted it. So
thank you so much for sharing all of that. And How would you describe the situation for LGBTI communities in Mongolia, and how do you think it has evolved over time?
So the human rights situation on the legislative or like at the policy level, Mongolia is quite progressive compared to many countries in the region, Asia and Pacific. For example, in the past 10 years, we have sexual orientation and gender identity as prohibited, you know, it's a protected ground in many important laws, such as the Criminal Code of 2015, Labor Law of 2022, Privacy Act of 2022, and many like ethical codes of professionals have sexual orientation and gender identity. So these are a great progress, you know. This is the hard work of the LGBT centers, international and national advocacy. However, unfortunately, although these are very good progress, the implementation of the practice of these policies and legislations are not quite in place yet. For example, the criminal code has an anti-discrimination clause. This was the law is from 2015. It became effective in 2017. So from 2017 till today, 2023, not a single case was resolved at the judicial level under this provision, anti-discrimination provision. So it says a lot. You know, a country of nearly 5 million people, the LGBT center documents, you know, human rights violations. Our data says different. We have our lived experiences. It's just simply not working. So other laws are quite new. You know, they are very recent. We are monitoring and we are trying to engage with the government to enhance capacity of government agencies and stuff. In terms of LGBTQI people in the social, cultural spheres of the society, there exists prejudices, stigma, all of that. It really prevails, you know, especially towards our trans and non-binary community. The current situation of LGBTQI people have not yet improved. I would say it's very slow. You know, in the region, like certain areas of the country, only like Ulaanbaatar. Ulaanbaatar is a very big city. It's the capital city. It's the biggest city. But only like one or two districts, and then it's their like sub-districts are queer friendly. But the rest of this city, homophobia, transphobia prevail. So like the intersection of class and gender and sexual orientation, it really matters. Like, and in your socioeconomic background, where do you live? And so in overall, I would say not good for LGBTQI people here in Mongolia.
I know you've also brought the situation of our communities in the country up to the international level at the United Nations. Mm-hmm. And there have been a few examples of your engagement in United Nations spaces. So yeah, can you tell me more about that?
First, I must really embrace the work of my predecessors who have already set the agenda for international advocacy within the organization. So we have been, the LGBT Center has been engaging in the UN system since 2008. We submitted our first CEDAW shadow report in 2008. So all in all, we have submitted around a dozen shadow reports, and that's how much we've engaged this in organization. And then we currently have a I believe about 60 LGBTQI specific recommendations obtained throughout this past 10 years or so. So in terms of my engagement, it was the third UPR cycle in 2020, CESCAR in 2022, and CEDAW in 2022. So UN mechanism, you know, it's like, at first it was very intimidating, especially like the UPR 2020, when I engaged in UPR, I was terrified. I didn't have like any experience. And second of all, I was terrified of losing opportunities, you know. But thankfully, with the support of ILGA, it went smooth. Because 2020 was pandemic, and I couldn't go to Geneva. I was able to have like dialogue with delegates from like 10, 11 member states on Zoom and deliver oral statement. I think that was very, very helpful because from the third UPR cycle, we obtained 15 LGBTQI specific recommendations. So one of the tactics I used during my advocacy, you know, meeting with delegates was giving them a context of how Mongolian governments understand minority or marginalized, those keywords. Like when they hear minority, they only think of disability. You know, so I was asking delegates to, when you make a recommendation to my country, please use a specific language, you know, please make sure you say lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, you know, intersex. Please make sure you use sexual orientation and gender identity specifically. Otherwise, we are going to be overlooked again, you know, under the term minority marginalized. So thankfully, they did. Many of them did. And I really believe that really helped shape the recommendations for delegates for the government and 15 LGBTQI-specific recommendations. That's really huge for us. And our government supported 12 of them and then noted 3 of them, meaning they didn't support 3 of them. So third UPR cycle, that all happened from a distance, and we were also able to engage, meet with delegates in country through our embassies, like that's what happened with UPR. And in June of 2022, participated in the 82nd CEDAW session. That was our third time submitting and engaging. You know, UPR and CEDAW, they are two different mechanisms, similar but different. You know, one is special procedure, the other one is treaty bodies. So CEDAW for me was also, again, quite new, but also because of UPR, I've had some confidence in me. And another organization that really helped for CEDAW was IRA. IRA really provided technical support in while I was in Geneva and really helped me to understand the committee and how to engage with them and setting up meetings, things like that. So through CEDAW, we obtained 6 LBTI recommendations. Also, I used the same tactic. Please use specific language to speak to our government. It was a very emotional time during CEDAW. I cried and I delivered the oral statement. It was very overwhelming, but I've learned so, so much. So by the time in September, CESCAR, I was pretty confident.
Yeah, and ready.
Yeah,
I'm sure. And yeah, you mentioned CESCAR, the the Committee of Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. Again, you engaged on behalf of LGBTI communities in Mongolia, we could say. And there was also a result of historical significance, because among the recommendations on trans persons that your country received, that was the very first time that the committee mentioned ICD-11, the latest international classification of diseases, which in essence, among many other things, of course, declassified trans identities as a mental disorder. So it was a pretty great result, not only just for your country, but like internationally as a whole. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering how the engagement with that specific committee went.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. So CESCAR was interesting because there was not enough civil society engagement in this 72nd CESCAR session. In fact, we were the LGBT Center was the only civil society organization to engage in the CESCAR, this session. So I was the only civil society representative coming from Mongolia to Geneva, whereas our government was like over a dozen people, you know. So in that sense, it was quite overwhelming. And then CESCAR, I had taken several tactics, like quick thinking, maybe. So for CESCAR, when we were developing our shadow report, we learned that we might be the only one to be going to submit a report. So we learned it from our network. And that was very sad for us, you know. So there are so many issues that's happening in Mongolia we are aware of, but that those issues are not going to be discussed in the session was very sad for us. So, you know, when you're developing a shadow report, it's very strict with like numbers, you know, how many words should be included. So you have to be very tactful. So we've decided to include at least the part on human rights defenders. You know, that is a hot topic, and there is a lot of issues with the new law. Mongolia is the first country in Asia Pacific region to pass a human rights defenders law. You know, the government is very proud of it, but you know, we see a lot of flaws. So anywho, so we included, like, we invested a whole page on it, and I prepared the oral statement where I was supposed to present it to the committee members, but it was just me and the committee members. So in a way, I had an advantage because I spent nearly 30 to 40 minutes with the committee members, just me discussing, you know. So I highlighted comprehensive anti-discrimination legislation, you know, how Mongolia should adopt. And then also highlighted trans healthcare, and especially the ICD-11. So for my preparation, I developed the very, very specific recommendations, you know, ICD-11, da-da-da-da-da. And thankfully, they took it and then they provided it. And it was just, it was glorious to see. And then actually on this, I want to also add, because I think treaty bodies also like UPR, like the other member states, they don't really give like trans-specific recommendations. That's like not, it doesn't happen often, you know. So I'm jumping back to UPR because the third UPR session, we also obtained a trans-specific recommendation from Israel. So that there was also quick thinking and strategy, because Israeli never, like, I was supposed to meet a delegate from Israel, and I was looking into what kind of recommendation Israel provides, you know, give in terms of LGBTQI persons. And while surfing through uprinfo.org, I learned Israel provides trans-specific recommendations. So we quickly changed the tactic, and because in Mongolia we have a gender marker provision in our civil registration law, so which where a trans or intersex person can have their gender marker changed. Unfortunately, that law again doesn't work because it requires medical intervention, which the healthcare sector does not have. So I pitched that to the Israeli delegate, and then we obtained a recommendation, particularly on that law, asking the government to remove the medical intervention from that law. And then our government supported it. So we have two trans-specific recommendations, very, very specific recommendations, and we are just very thrilled. I just want to shout out to Kisiana at the ILGA World, who had met me both of my times in Geneva, but particularly during CESCAR when I was like alone, and we had a coffee before I met the delegates, I mean committee members, and I was telling her like my strategies and then my recommendations, you know, what kind of recommendations we are aiming for. And she asked me excellent questions, you know. She was like, is your recommendation measurable? You know, how are you going to measure it? And then, like, she pointed me to a direction to really shape my recommendation very, very specific. And then, after the coffee, I went to my hotel. I did not sleep. I was up all night redrafting all the recommendations. And that's how ICD-11 like really popped up, because I was re like I was making it more like detailed and measurable. And so thank you, Christiana, for your very valuable advice to me.
Thank you so much for sharing also these many insights about the work of human rights defenders when they advocate in UN spaces, because it's very difficult for everyone to understand what happens before you meet the governments and the various committees, but also like it's difficult for people to understand like how quickly do they have to adapt their tactics to like developments or how they do research on. On what they have to say, really. So it thank you for sharing all of that. Now that you've engaged with many UN bodies and with different mechanisms, what happens next for Mongolia, and how do you think these recommendations will be picked up if they will be picked up by your government, and how are you working around that?
Number one thing is to look at national implementation plan for these recommendations. So we are waiting. We are writing to ministries who are in charge, because treaty bodies are governed by different ministries. So outreaching to them, asking for the implementation, and asking to be included in the working group of planning. Also, aside from that national program, like there is an existing national programs. Like in Mongolia, we have Vision 2050. That's an SDG program, and that covers a lot of areas of humans. I mean, a lot of areas in the society. So we pay close attention to national programs, and then we align our plans with the national programs, because we can't really go against, you know. So it's a we think it's a smart way to plan. And then developing like long-term project proposals that also aligns with the recommendations. And then of course community, educating our community, and then do our regular, you know, community building, movement building, all of that is happening at the same time. And
I would like to end the interview with a question that I didn't anticipate, so I hope it's okay. I was wondering like whether you had a dream or a hope for our communities in Mongolia?
There are many, many hopes and wishes, but priority hope is to have a community center of our own, like a safe space for our community. That has been, well, that has been my dream for the last 3 years as an ED, and that's definitely like a priority on my agenda as an ED for the community, for the center. But it's a, of course, we want, you know, we want to walk the street without retaliation. We walk the street without fear and stigma. That's I think, given for all of us, right? That's what we wish for. That's why we are fighting for this. And
thanks to you for doing all of that. Thanks for doing this interview with us. And we wish you all the best on all the follow-up procedures that you're doing in country after so many great results at the United Nations. And
thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being with us today. You can find every episode on all streaming platforms, and transcriptions are available on ilga.org. Making Rainbow Waves is a podcast by Ilga World. This episode was hosted by Daniele Paletta and edited by Kevin Boaccio. Thanks for listening.